yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
Hey, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
It's Mookie Betts.
This is Daniel Bard.
It's Steve Aoki.
There's Saul Tillamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
Pitch. Swung and drill. Deep left field. Away, back and gone. Angel Martinez. He will take a joyous stroll around the bases. A three-run bullet to the bleachers in left. And the Guardians lead it 7-4 on a five-run eighth inning.
Home run call of the day. Angel Martinez with a go-ahead home run. Tom Hamilton with the home run call of the day. What a call. What a home run. What a day. At BB isn't boring. At BB isn't boring. Appreciate everybody. If you're going to the socials, buying the gear, listening to the podcast, the whole ball of wax. Today, we found one of our favorites. When I say we found one of our favorites, because he's one of our new favorites. Jameson Taillon of the Chicago Cubs. Yep, the Cubs are... Everyone talks about the Dodgers, right? What the Dodgers are doing with pitching, what the Dodgers are doing, and we just did it the other day on the podcast with Julian McWilliams. Let's start talking about the Cubs, what they're doing, how they're developing guys, how they're developing pitchers, how they're winning baseball games, how Pete Crow Armstrong is, oh my goodness, so good, right? Well, we caught up with Jameson Taillon, who is having a really, really good year, is a great story. Former second overall pick in 2010, had battled numerous arm surgeries, had battled cancer, and now, after starting with the Pirates, going to the Yankees, now with the Cubs, has landed in a great place with a great personality and a great perspective. Yep, all of this. And, as we point out, is the best in baseball when it comes to doing the thing that every pitcher in baseball is striving to do, is the new big thing, believe it or not, throwing your first pitch for a strike. Yep. He's really, really good at it. All right. He's also really, really good at podcasting. We appreciate it. J-Mo. Yep. J-Mo. J-Mo and Bradfo. Like I said in the podcast, if we aren't making the t-shirts, we aren't trying. All right, here you go. Here's J-Mo and Bradfo. All right, there's no human being on the planet I'd rather be talking to right now more than Jameson Taillon. So thank you. Thank you, my friend, for jumping on. I would say you're in a bullpen, but as you just explained to me, you're also in a bullpen / bar. Post Malone, thanks to Post Malone, right? Correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So I'm here at Wrigley. This is our home bullpen. And I guess when we were out of town, he was here and they turned this into a bar. So we got back and it smells a little bit like some spilled booze, but it's all good. We can still do our work in here.
Put that on the t-shirt. It smells like a little bit like booze, but it's all right. We can still get our work.
Yeah, we can still do our job. It's all good. Still do
it. I mean, I think there's something to say for life, that statement. So Jameson, we met for about 5 seconds once. I gave you a sticker as they were kicking me out of the clubhouse in spring training last year. And I don't expect you to remember it, but I like to take all credit for whatever success you have by giving you that sticker. So congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. I remember getting the sticker and I put it on my coffee maker or on my grinder, my coffee grinder. Coffee's a big part of my daily routine. And I put it on my spring training grinder that day. So I remember.
And the coffee tasted different immediately, didn't it?
Yep. My life's just been a lot better ever since that moment.
By the way, so I noticed, and our good friend Adam Ottavino has helped coordinate this whole podcast. When was the first time that you were called your nickname?
So when I was a kid, I'm the youngest of four, and I think my siblings just thought my name was a little little too serious, a little too formal. So I don't even remember when I started getting called JMO. My sister started calling me JMO when I was like a baby, and all my siblings. So it's kind of just honestly something I was like born into, I guess. Like I was such a baby when they started calling me that. So it's just stuck for a really long time. I've got just a few people in my life that even call me Jameson anymore.
It's a good name. It's like, honestly, we're thinking of getting a dog. I might name the dog after you. I mean, this is like this, and that sounded terribly. That sounded terrible. That was actually a compliment. Yeah, I was trying to give you a compliment. Yeah.
No, I would love that. And, I definitely appreciate my name Jameson as I've gotten older. I'm very into whiskey, so I've gotten some free shots out of it once I tell people at restaurants and stuff my name. Just like when I was a kid, I did think it was a little formal, and as I've gotten older, I've grown to
What
appreciate
is
it.
your middle? What is your middle name?
Lee. Jameson Lee.
Let's see. See, I feel like if you wanted to ever pen a article or a book or a dissertation, you would have to say Jameson Lee. Like that would have to be it, right?
And I don't read much, but maybe I should try my hand at writing.
Okay. Immediately, it becomes so this I say this James or I don't even know like what do you want me to call you? Like do you want to call
You
J?
pick Jameson,
Okay. All
JMO.
right.
It's literally dealer's choice.
All right, Jay. My middle name is Farnsworth. So I always said I would be appreciably richer slash more respected if I did either R. Farnsworth Bradford or Robert Farnsworth Bradford. I
Sounds
mean,
very much like an old school military name or
right.
something.
Instead, I've defaulted to a social media account named Bradfo. So, like JMO Bradfo, here we go. It
Here we go.
sounds like a podcast is born. All right. So I want to congratulate you on all your success. I also want to congratulate you on throwing the most first pitch strikes in the history of baseball.
So it's funny because we actually, our pitching coach prints out like a stat sheet with a ranking and a leaderboard. It has like team stats and then individual stats. So like, where do the Cubs rank in first pitch strikes, quick outs, whatever, where you're executing your stuff, location. On the individual stats, I like to see where I am on first pitch strikes. And for a little while, Colin Ray had me. And then recently, Drew Pomeranz has been up there with me. So it's like fun to just track. But that is something that, especially as I've gotten older, like, pitching coaches hammered into your head at a young age, like the value of being 0-1 versus 1-0. And I think in 0-1 counts, hitters are like below replacement level, 500 OPS, let's say. And then in 1-0 counts, they're like Shohei Ohtani, Barry Bonds, Aaron Judge, they're 1,000 OPS guys. So it's like just by throwing that first pitch strike, it can shift the at bat that much. And then for us here at Wrigley, like if the wind's blowing in, I want to throw first pitch strikes all day. And even if it's blown out, like with our defense, with P. Crow Armstrong in center, we got Tuck and Happ surrounding them, Dansby and Nico up the middle. Like I want to let you hit it and see what happens.
Well, the reason why I like to say that I'm on top of this stuff, but I'm just randomly on top of it sometimes. The reason I even looked it up was because one of my favorite topics are guys who played in Tampa, and I just had on Zach Eflin, so he played in Tampa. So we keep talking because the guys in Tampa said, "Listen, there's no secret sauce, man. It's just throw the ball over the plate." And so I was talking to Zach about that. And he's like, yeah, I like I but I'm having a hard time doing it. I'm like, well, how can you have a hard time doing it? It's so
Right,
simple, right?
right.
And it seems so simple, but at the same time, we're all
Yeah.
here but you're doing it really well. I want to
So
know
the
how you're doing it so well.
it's funny that you talked to Zach Eflin because he's actually a guy that me and him have some similarities stuff wise. Like he's got great command. I really enjoy watching him, how he uses his two different fastballs and his cutter off of that and his sweeper. So when I'm watching video, if he's faced the team recently, I actually like to
Ooh.
see how he attacks a team. But it's funny, like I was tight with Tyler Glasnow. He goes to Tampa and I'm like, dude, what's in the water down there? What are they telling you? What's the pitching coach like? He's like, they give you a lot of confidence because they tell you why you're good and why they think you could be really good. And then they tell you to throw strikes. It's like, oh, I mean, it's super simple, but you know, up here, like you can psych yourself out. You can look, you can get paralysis by analysis. You can look at information all day and be like, oh man, this guy hits this against first pitch cutters. And it's like, yeah, but if you execute it down and away, no one's really doing well on that pitch. So, yeah, as I've gotten older, like I don't throw 96, 97 anymore. I'm more in that 92, 93 range. Like, I know that I need to do the little things well. I can't give up free passes and I have to get ahead. So yeah. And for me too, like, because I throw so many pitches, I have the, like, if you're a two pitch guy, saying throw it middle, unless you throw 100 is going to be hard. Throwing six pitches, I can sequence it and say, well, one at bat, I threw him a cutter away. And the next at bat, I threw him a sinker in. So while they both look like they're over the heart of the plate, they have very different kind of attack angles and stuff. So I can kind of protect my stuff in the zone by just throwing a bunch of everything.
Can I tell you that, you know, like you talk about with Tyler, like it's the same message that we hear. And the guy who, like, for me, it hit the most was actually a guy that I'm hoping comes on in a couple of days. Just retired, Jake Diekman. So he obviously, Jake had a lot of problems, like consistently throwing strikes. And then 2 years ago, he goes to Tampa, and everyone's like, "Well, here's the ultimate test." And he had like a one ERA. It was crazy. And so I asked him. I said, "Okay, well, what's the difference?" And he just said something as simple as, "When you hear it from them, it just hits different." And I don't know if like that resonates for you too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, so, I mean, I got to Chicago and our pitching coach is huge on that because of the elements and because of our defense and stuff like that. And when you have people like, our pitching coach has been around a long time. He's coached some great players. And when people of that stature, like sometimes a fresh voice and people with stature and a good reputation, when they tell you something, it's a little easier to buy in. And again, for me, like when I look behind me on the field, I'm on the mound all by myself, and I look behind and I see Dansby and Nico back there and PCA up the middle and Ian, and I'm just like, I'm gonna throw strikes, man. I'm not gonna beat myself. If you're gonna beat me, you're gonna have to really hit it hard in a gap or something, or over the fence, which people do off me, but I'm willing to take that risk.
That day you mentioned PCA, that day that I gave you the sticker was a day I had talked to Pete PCA for about 8 minutes about sort of like, he was finding his way, right? Like, and like what it should be appreciated is, and you can appreciate it maybe more than anybody, actually playing on the diamond of what the whole package this guy is. Because at that time, that day, the day forever should be known as the day you put a sticker on your coffee maker, is that day was the day where I heard this guy talk for the first time. I said, listen, he doesn't have it all figured out, but he's trying to figure it out the right way.
Yep.
I mean, I'm just talking about my 8 minutes with him, but you can speak more to the player he has become, which has been an MVP candidate, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, you always knew he was going to run the bases and play great defense. So like, his floor is a great, really solid big league player. And then, you know, we would see his bat on the backfields and I would watch him take BP and you're like, oh shit, this kid might freaking rake. Like it is in there. But you know, like at the big league level, sometimes you just have to go through some struggles and then have success and say, I belong here. Like I could tell him all day, dude, you're so talented. Like I've played with way less talented guys who have really hit in the big leagues. And it's easy to hear that. That's another thing to go out there and actually like experience success for yourself and figure out what pitches you slug, what pitches you should lay off, like, you know, how pitchers are going to attack you, your swing cues, what drills do you like to do every day when you show up at the yard? Like, it's, for him, I think it was just like figuring it out, but he's got that like aura. I know kids are saying that word a lot these days. He's got the aura. Like he's got that it factor that like, just not everyone has. Like, he truly has that personality. Everyone wants to be around him. He's electrifying. Like, the fans love him. He's super cool. Dresses super cool.
Yeah, like, he had blue hair. I mean, like,
it's he's the only guy that can pull it off. But he's got that kind of it factor. So it's been really fun to watch him just blossom and figure it out.
So he was, I think, the 19th overall pick in 2020. You were the second overall pick in 2010. And I know that this is a cliche question, but I still like asking guys who are picked that high about perspective, about what you would tell your younger self at that time. Because, you don't have it all figured out. But when you're like, here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go. I am a professional baseball player. Looking back at that time, because there's going to be a number two overall pick this year. Science would suggest that. What would you tell that number two overall pick who was going to be picked this year?
Well, first off, if I could go back to myself, it's interesting. Like, I was picked in between Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. And for a while, like, I took longer in the minor leagues than them. I had injuries. My career was a little bit delayed to start. And, you know, when I was drafted, I put all these timelines on myself. I want to debut by this age. I want to win this many games, have this ERA. And it's like, you know, you can't control a lot of that. And you grew up hearing that in baseball, control what you can control. And as I've gone through things over the years, I've just learned that, like, you really can only control your effort and your work ethic and being a good teammate. So I would just say to myself back then is, like, focus on the things you can control. Putting timelines and comparing yourself is the thief of joy. Everyone's on their own path. Everyone's on their own journey. And that's probably what I would say to someone getting drafted today. It's like, everyone's journey is different. Figure out what works for you. Figure out your routine. Figure out your process. Figure out the little things. Like, what do you do in between pitches? What are your thoughts? What are your delivery cues? Like, what do you need to focus on when you play catch? Like, those are things you can control. Having a timeline and, like, you know, putting, like, a lot of extra unneeded pressure on yourself. There's already enough pressure being a first-round draft pick. Putting that extra pressure is just nonsense.
By the way, thief of joy, man. That hits.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, for me, I could have the greatest finish to my career ever, and, like, I'm never going to be Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, and I'm at peace with that. My job now is to be the best teammate possible, be a great player for the Cubs. Like, I feel like I've been a lot happier ever since I stopped comparing myself. Like, I'm really happy for those dudes. I got to know them in high school at events and stuff, but, like, I'll never be them, and that's okay. I'm myself, and I'm a great teammate, and I bring it every day, and I work really hard, and that's perfectly okay too.
By the way, you're the best podcaster we've ever had on the podcast in a bar/bullpen as well.
Yeah, they're out here doing our mound work. We've got the best grounds crew in the game.
Oh, it's people see, that's what people don't understand. Like, we see the Ivy, we see the Wrigley and everything else. We don't see that. Like, thank you for that. Thank you for
this is pretty cool. I think we have one of the best bullpens in the league. So this is like our plyo wall. Some guys like to throw with the strings up. We've got another plyo thing if you want to throw them off the mound. Our mounds are awesome. You can blast music in here. It's pretty cool.
What would be what's your walk-in music?
I do When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin.
Ooh.
I love that song, and I've just had it since I was a rookie. I tried changing it when I got to the Cubs. I was like, we play so many day games here. I got to bring the vibes. And I got off to a really bad start, and I was like, I'm going back to the basics, back to Led Zeppelin.
You know, so I demand our producer when I do the radio, every rejoin is Ace of Spades by Motorhead.
Oh yeah.
Just because I'm like, how can you not, you know, it's like, how can you not like have the heart rate go through the roof?
I used to play that song on Guitar Hero back in the day.
You did?
Oh yeah.
Like, that's how this is a documentary. I guarantee you probably have. Are you a doc guy?
I am, but more of like a crime documentary guy.
Okay, so you probably haven't seen this. It's about the Air Guitar World Championships.
Oh no, I haven't seen it.
Oh yeah, you try to. It's a deep cut with the docs, but it's really, really good. Air Guitar Nation is called, and that's what you realize, and as you just said, Ace of Spades, Motorhead is the song that they go to. Right. It's like, you know, you throw.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Just last thing about the sort of your path, and I sincerely congratulate you, man. Like, it's, you're having a great year, and you've had such a good career. For you, what is it? Because we're here to educate, inform, entertain, and all of it. But for because I do hope that people listen and say, you know, it's not always a straight path, and sometimes something somebody says just hits. For you, if you had to say something that, like, a turning point, maybe there wasn't one turning point, but for you, what was the fork in the road moment for you?
I've had a couple. So one thing that the Pirates used to do that was really cool was they used to do, like, when I was in the minor leagues, they would bring over big leaguers to the minor league side just to do Q&As, like, once a week at night, very informal, go if you want, not mandatory. And, like, I would always go. I remember Garrett Jones. He was a power hitting lefty, awesome dude. He was really good friends coming up with Joe Mauer. And so I was like, what was Joe Mauer like? You know, what was rooming with him in the minor leagues and stuff? And he was like, Joe Mauer was the most meticulous dude. Like, he knew exactly how much water he was putting in his body. He knew exactly what he wanted to focus on in the cage that day, exactly what pitch he was going to hit off that pitcher that night. And I remember hearing that. I was like 19 years old. And hearing that was like, oh, shit, I'm doing this wrong. Like, I'm not – I thought I worked hard. I thought I was paying attention. So that was just, like, at a young age, that one kind of, like, hit for me where it was, like, this is a job. Like, if I want to play at that level against grown men, like, I need to start treating my body and my routine like I'm a grown man and a professional. That one hit. What else? I had another one come to mind, and it's
– Well, I mean anything – obviously, you've gone on a pretty good run here in the last few years. I don't know if it's just the evolution of you or if there was something.
Yeah. So when I had my, this is kind of just like internal, but when I had my second Tommy John, I was very on the fence about even like wanting to play anymore. Like internally, I don't even know if I told that many people that, but I was just like, dude, I've had cancer. I've had a hernia. I've had TJ already. Like, I've been hitting the head with line drives. I'm like, do I have it in me to do another grueling year or two of rehab? There's not that many guys at that point in time that had done two Tommy Johns. And COVID ended up happening. And I got to spend a lot of time just by myself, like working on things mechanically, rehab. I just did a lot by myself during COVID. And I like totally fell in love with baseball all over again in a whole different way. Like in the, like the curious way, like I'm curious how I can stay healthy. I'm curious how good I can be, curious, you know, where this can take me. And like that just ignited something inside of me that was a lot of fun. Like it made baseball just really fun. Like that rehab was much less about like hitting timelines and I got to throw this many throws on this day. It was all about like just going on this journey and seeing if I can recreate myself and stay on the field and be healthy. And so that to me was like a turning point for my career. And I think since my second Tommy John, I'm like, I don't know, top 20 in baseball in innings pitched and game started. And for me, like, again, I'm never going to have 100 more. Like, that's something I take a lot of pride in now is like taking the ball, pitching, going deep into games. That to me is a good, being a good teammate. So, yeah, I think just like my second Tommy John was kind of a turning point.
That's awesome. I mean, so you look forward to going to work. I mean, it's like such a simple thing.
Yeah.
But you look forward to going to work. It's good.
Yeah. I just started viewing things as like, I don't know why I wasn't doing this sooner, but I started viewing baseball in my career as this problem I needed to solve in a fun way. Like, oh man, my delivery is feeling off. Instead of getting stressed and going crazy about it, it's like, well, what can I do in the gym today to make my back leg feel more involved? What can I do in catch play? Like, let me collaborate with the strength coaches and the PTs and the pitching coaches and see, like, can I throw plyos and medicine balls today to make something click? And it just became this like fun little game I play every day. Like I show up and it's just so fun to try to solve a problem.
But by the way, you saying that it hit so hard. And I'm so, this is one, honestly, I'm not just saying this. This is one of the reasons I love doing this because a couple days ago, Charlie sat down with Charlie Morton and he had a line and he said, if they give you the opportunity to figure it out, then figure it out.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, like,
I love Charlie, by the way. He was a pirate. He was always like so nice to me when I was just a stupid young buck. So he's always been great.
It's great. So he's been on the podcast a few times. And what's great is that you ask him a question and there's a pause and you're like, oh shit, is he pissed at me? Like, and then
he's one of the most thoughtful.
Then there's a five minute answer coming around the corner. But that is like, it's like, if they give you the opportunity to figure it out, then figure it out. And that's exactly what you did. I mean, that's what you seemingly do every day. So,
yeah. It's funny how sometimes like those really simple. So this is now it's starting to spark things. So I was in high A, 2012. I didn't have like, I threw strikes. I was having an okay year, but I didn't have like great command. And I'd get really frustrated in my bullpens. And my pitching coach one time was like, where are you trying to throw that fastball? I was like, I'm trying to throw it down and away. He's like, then effing do it. Throw the fastball down and away. quit trying. Quit. He's like, just do it. Tell your body to do it. Like, quit manipulating your delivery. Quit making this some big, like, just go out there and do it. And ever since then, that's kind of like, my command has been a lot better later in my career. And that's like a thought. It's like, when I want to get the sweeper down and away, just get it down and away. Like, I know it's not that simple. There's human error. But like, that was one of those things too, where it was like, oh, not, I don't have to get my big toe involved in my delivery. Just, I need to find a way to get this pitch there. Let's go do it right here.
Oh, so good. I'm fired up now. Well, I just realized looking at myself, I have more baseballs and boring stuff than I think any. I have a t-shirt. I have a thing. I have a thing. And by the way, if you win the World Series, you get, we'll pay for your tattoo.
Yeah, I don't have any.
Oh, you don't? Well, yeah, so this was done. This is a whole thing. If the Dodgers won the World Series, and Joe Kelly and I got baseballs and boring tattoos.
Sick. Yeah. I, if we won the World Series, I'd be more than happy to get a freaking tattoo. I need that.
Well, that, and by the way, the guy who does it is the guy, Mr. Cartoon, who only does Eminem and Beyonce, and now you, when you win the World Series.
Let's go.
So, but thanks so much, man. It's been a joy. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I could sit around and talk ball all day. I love it. So this was fun.